Greetings, and welcome to Occasional Content Discussions. I'm your host, Evan Daffron, and I'm aided by...
Chris G.
And what we want to say is... Welcome, everyone, once again, on what fundamentally will be our last look at the media of Twin Peaks, at least.
That's what you say.
There is no more. Unless we watch, like, the pilot that's an entity into itself.
Just give it a little bit of time. Paramount is going to...
I don't think they will.
I don't know. If they think they can make some money, they'll do it. They'll have some kind of spinoff, or they'll create something that's part of the Twin Peaks universe. Or
I would have to imagine that Mark Frost and David Lynch have it in a clause somewhere. Kind of like Robert Zemeckis has Back to the Future, like, you can't touch it until I'm dead. There's probably something like that in place with Twin Peaks.
Well, I don't know. There could be. But I honestly don't know. I think Mark Frost could be talked into it.
Yeah.
I mean, I do. Based on some things he said in interviews. I mean, I don't think he's completely shutting the door on it. Maybe that's just what I want to hear.
I mean, my heart would long for it more, but I'll be honest, we've spent a lot of time in this universe.
I like it here. I like it here in the White Lodge, and don't want to leave.
Well, I mean, with not a moment to spare, we left off at episode 8 last time, and we've got 9 through 18 to get through now.
Let's go.
And some discussion to be had after, I feel.
Okay.
So we'll just get right into it.
Do we have any email to check or anything first?
Yeah, let me take a look here.
I know you've put our email address out there for people,
yes,
which is ocdpod@gmail.com.
Ask OCDpod.
Oh, see, that's why we're not getting any emails, is because people like me thought it was ocdpod@gmail.com. It's ask OCDpod.
ASKOCDPOD@gmail.com.
Okay.
And
all
I'm
right.
Getting signed in here.
Well, let's just take a minute and read all those messages.
Yeah.
Or maybe just pick a few.
We've got one email.
Okay, just one?
From Security Alert.
Oh, for like you logged in on a different device or something. So that's it. That is it. All right, folks.
There is one in spam. As well,
okay.
From Thought Media Jobs.
Yeah.
Your podcast deserves to go viral.
That's right.
I agree.
That's right.
Thank you for acknowledging Thought Media Jobs.
Thought Media Jobs. Yes. Thank you.
So, drop us a line, though. I mean, give us something to consider talking about, all you listeners.
Yeah, and you hate listeners.
Yeah, go back and bump up those numbers for Mission Impossible and the first half of the season. Thank you for engaging with us, no one. Episode 9.
What about reviews? We've got some new reviews, right?
Do we?
No.
Oh, I don't know. Have you looked?
No.
I was excited.
No.
Bummer.
But yeah, folks, review us.
Rome wasn't built in a day.
Yeah. You can rate 5 stars. You can hate rate, whatever. Ratings is ratings, right?
Rubbin's racing. So, episode 9, This is the Chair. The Las Vegas police discover no record of Dougie Jones before 1997 and take fingerprints and DNA from his coffee mug. In Twin Peaks, Bobby visits his mother with Frank and Hawk to ask Cooper about Major Briggs, who long foretold of their arrival one day, and she gives them a cylinder containing a location, date, and Cooper's name written twice.
Hidden in a piece of furniture.
It's like a chair.
It's like in a lipstick tube type type weird cylinder hidden in the like a back of a chair. It's kind of cool. Yeah.
And then while that's going on, the FBI stops in Buckhorn to examine the corpse with Major Briggs' fingerprints. Hastings, the school principal guy, tells Agent Tammy that he and Ruth visited Briggs in another dimension where he had been hibernating, quote-unquote, for years, and witnessed his beheading as he was saying, Cooper, Cooper.
I remember in the first half of the season, and I don't think we discussed this, when they arrest Bill Hastings or when they're questioning him at the police
station.
Matthew Lillard does outstanding job. Like, believed that that character was totally innocent. Like had no idea why he was there, why he was being interrogated, and was incredibly upset, you know. Even when the police arrive at his house, he answers the door, he's like completely seems to be completely caught off guard, like, hey, hello, police officers.
He is playing a normal straight character that would be in a normal procedural in this universe, mm-hmm. where no one acts that normally. Mm-hmm. And I think you're right. He does the most convincing portrayal of at least an average person in this series.
As things fall apart and evidence is, you know, starting to mount that he was involved to some extent in what happens to Major Briggs, even that breakdown is really good acting. Really good acting. So if
He's swinging for
in the high likelihood that Matthew Lillard is listening. Loved you in Scream, and great job here in Twin Peaks: The Return.
Big ups to your work in Scooby Doo.
Well, unfortunately, I didn't see that one, but I'm sure he did a great job.
He always does a great job. Episode 10. I mean, I say this after every first episode that we do, but folks, we're not covering every single thing that happens.
Oh, yeah. Come on. No, we can't.
Some people mostly don't even get mentioned. We say that every time, and it's always after I start into it.
We already passed all the random shouts of 119?
Feel like we have.
Okay. I never figured that out, but hey.
Just assumed it was 911 backwards.
Maybe.
But I don't know why that.
But it's truly not spoken backwards.
No. I don't know why that junkie lady was saying it. I don't know. But that's Twin Peaks, though.
Don't know. I also don't think she was taking very good care of her kid.
Negligent at best. I agree.
Negligent at best. You're giving her too much credit.
Episode 10, quote, Lara is the one. Again, just 3 points here. Richard attacks his grandmother, Sylvia, in her home and robs her. She calls Ben and demands money from him.
That was a terrible scene.
I was just about to say, that was harrowing. Terrible. Yeah. The kind of disabled brother is there. That weird thing on the table. Well, it kept saying, like, hello, John, or whatever.
Oh, yeah. It was just one of the... Was his name Richard? No, not Richard.
Richard the disabled, is the grandson.
Yeah,
I think it's Johnny.
Johnny. Yeah, I think that's right. It was one of his
It would
toys,
have been Audrey's right? brother.
Yeah.
But a classic uncomfortable Lynch scene, for sure.
Yeah, very disturbing. I mean, has he run over the kid yet?
Yes.
Okay, yeah, another incredibly disturbing scene. Yeah, that Richard Horn.
What a dick.
Yes. Definitely the son of, we can't say.
Well, now he's living up to his name, Richard Dick.
Oh, I thought it was man, a good David bit. Lynch, way to go.
He really figured that one out.
Yeah.
The grandmother gets robbed. Gordon has a vision of Lara. Albert informs him that the FBI has intercepted a text message from Diane informing someone of Hastings' arrest. Tammy shows them a photo that links Cooper's doppelganger with the glass box in New York. That's about the most you really get an explanation of what's going on in New York, mm-hmm. from my memory. I mean, that as far as them kind of even remotely touching back on that.
Wasn't it Jew Day?
Never really said.
Yeah.
Okay. I think in the first half, We just called it the entity.
Okay.
Or something of that nature.
The blob.
Episode 11, there's fire where you're going. Becky learns that Steven has been cheating on her with Gersten Hayward. So, I threw this in here just because I did not put this all together during my initial watch. Becky, if you all recall, is the daughter of Bobby and Shelley.
Mm-hmm.
And Steven's just her boyfriend, fiance, whatever. Or, well, I guess husband.
They might be married.
I think they are.
Yeah.
But that lady that Steven is cheating with is one of the Hayward daughters.
It's Donna's little sister.
Yeah.
Youngest sister.
I don't even remember hearing her name.
She was in early episodes of season one. I remember she was playing the piano.
I remember them being kids, but I meant like during my watching of The Return, I don't remember Hayward being thrown around or there being even that much
emphasis.
I don't
know that her name was her name even mentioned?
See, that's what I mean.
I don't know.
But in the slog of getting through some of these, there are finer details that I kind of glossed over. At the double R, Bobby and Shelley discuss the incident with her. Okay, and then we're pivoting back to the location where Hastings met with Major Briggs. The FBI finds Ruth's actual body. If you all remember, there was a kind of a mix-up with, like, a body and then a severed head. So Ruth's body is actually here, presumably in Buckhorn, with coordinates written on one arm. While there, Gordon sees the woodsman in a vortex and is drawn back away from it by Albert. One of the woodsmen sneaks up on Hastings and kills him in the car. It's just kind of a weird thing that happens in a flash.
Yep.
If you remember, Gordon very astutely observes, and then he goes, yep, he's dead. Like, and half of his head is, like, gone or whatever. Yeah. Love that guy. In Nevada, Dougie's boss sends Cooper to give the Mitchums a $30 million check after realizing their claim is legitimate. The Mitchums plan to kill Cooper, but Bradley Mitchum has a prophetic dream where they decide not to murder him and take him out for drinks, which I thought was really cute. They kind of are going back and forth, the brothers, and the Jim Belushi ones, like, if there's a certain thing in that box, then, like, he's good, and it's a pie. Toward the end of the episode, they're just sitting in a bar, and I didn't get the impression that Cooper reacted to the words damn good.
I don't recall that, no.
But I do remember it all just kind of goes out on a weird, like, just guy playing a piano.
Yep. Wait, you mean an episode of Twin Peaks went out kind of weird? That's odd.
It's very odd.
Very unusual. Let me say something about the bodies of Major Briggs and it was Ruth. What was her name? Ruth.
Just Ruth, you know.
Okay, Ruth. I'm sure she had a last name. I don't remember. And who do you think put those bodies there in that apartment?
There's not a lot of... Because what, if we kind of back up, my memory is Ruth's head, but this Briggs body.
Yes.
And then Ruth's real body is here at this random house in...
Just out in the yard of this random house.
Kind of, not abandoned, but kind of abandoned, like a vacant lot of sorts.
Uh-huh.
I believe they say that Hastings' fingerprints are all over the apartment with Briggs's body and Ruth's head, and that's how he gets... kind of imprisoned in the first place.
Okay, so Hastings put the bodies there.
I believe he allegedly blacked out.
Okay.
There's not really a firm explanation because he doesn't remember. And that's part of his big spiral and part of his convincing acting is because he's like, I know I was sneaking around with Ruth, but then they go to meet Briggs in this place and then... There is an explanation about, like, they're talking to Briggs, and he floats up and gets decapitated. But then Hastings is like, but then I blanked out, and then I was just back, in a relatively normal place. But he had no memory of, I guess you could say, the crime.
Okay. I mean, there's so many unanswered questions. Just add that to the list. I mean,
really?
Yeah.
So episode 12, Let's Rock.
Let's rock.
Gordon and Albert recruit Tammy and deputize Diane to the Blue Rose Task Force. In Twin Peaks, Sarah Palmer has an unsettling experience in the grocery store, which leads the hawk to check on her at the house where he hears a sound behind Sarah, but it's never really addressed.
Mm-hmm.
Also in Twin Peaks, Audrey Horne demands that her husband Charlie help her find Billy, her missing lover. That was one of the most annoying sequences I've ever sat through in my life.
It just never end. It never seemed to end.
They don't move. She stands in one spot. He's sitting there, and he's like hunched over, and he's like, "Now, Audrey." And she is being like unwavering and just like belligerent at this dude who we don't know. And this is
Charlie.
This is the first appearance of Audrey as well.
Yeah,
and
another deceased actor, by the way. That played Charlie. Yeah. You know, by the way, follow a Twin Peaks fan account on Twitter, and I can't remember the handle or I would shout it out. But they posted a picture yesterday as we record this of the restaurant, the Double R.
Mead's Cafe.
Yes. Them transforming it temporarily back into a Double R with signage outside. And that was 10 years ago. 10 years ago, they were shooting it. 8 years ago, of course, the return comes out on Showtime. But 10 years.
Is it Mead or Tweeds?
I don't remember. I thought it started with an M. So when you said Mead's, that sounded right. But
I want to go there.
They should call it the Double R.
And it just is what it is.
Yeah, I mean, you'd go. I would think it'd be kind of disappointing if you went, though, wouldn't it? Like
where's Norma?
Like, wow, it's a lot smaller than I thought it was. Well, can I get some coffee while I'm here and some cherry pie? You don't have cherry pie? What are you missing an opportunity here? You don't serve cherry pie here? Come on.
I'm certain that they're grateful for all the business that the show has brought in.
Yeah, well, then you know they probably do have cherry pie, right?
Probably keep it in stock, I would have to imagine.
And hopefully some damn fine coffee.
While all that was transpiring at the Great Northern, Sheriff Frank visits Ben Horn to tell him that his grandson had played a role in killing a boy in a hit and run.
And Ben was like, oh, not again.
He's like, he's that done Richard. Thing. He's
I got to bail him again, bail him out again.
But also attempted to kill the only witness.
Yeah, the story kept getting worse as Sheriff Frank was telling it to Ben. And I felt for Ben. I did. I felt bad for Ben.
And Ben agrees to pay the witness's medical costs
mm-hmm.
and returns a Cooper's old room key, which had made it back to the Great Northern by mail.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then Diane finds the coordinates on Ruth's arm point to Twin Peaks. So it's all kind of circling the wagon at this point. Episode 13, what story is that, Charlie, is the title. The Mitchums thank Cooper / Dougie. I feel like for intent of understanding at this point, I'm still going to call him Dougie. But the Mitchum
Dougie
brothers.
Jones.
Yep. Doug Jones. Thank Dougie and Dougie's boss with gifts. I couldn't have told you his name, Anthony Sinclair, the Tom Sizemore character.
Okay, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Is about to poison...
Another dead actor, by the way.
is about to poison Dougie.
Mm-hmm.
But then, for no reason at all, he relents and confesses to the plot with the Mr. Todd.
Mm-hmm. That whole confession was just based on...
Doug being nice.
Just the way he looked at Doug and Dougie being nice to him. I mean, Dougie, of course, doesn't talk.
Yeah, continuing.
So he never said a word.
The bizarre behavior and treatment of Dougie, who you any other person in the world would be concerned about and think he had a stroke.
Mm-hmm.
But everyone somehow just keeps treating him as this, like, bastion.
Wow,
of,
Dougie has suddenly lost 30 pounds and he's a whole lot quieter.
Yeah. And everyone
over the weekend.
Yeah. And they're just like, but I see what you're doing, Dougie.
You just keep it up, Dougie.
Very odd. Mr. C arrives in Montana where he's been pursuing Ray, but Ray is shacked up with a gang.
Mm-hmm.
Leading to one of your favorite things.
Oh,
I remember
man.
You
I love this scene.
This arm wrestling.
Love that. Love it.
Weird deal. Mr. C defeats the guy in the arm wrestling, kills him, commands everyone to leave. Mr. C interrogates Ray about trying to assassinate him and trying to give up more information about coordinates. Ends up just shooting him and sending him to the Black Lodge. At the Double R, Big Ed and Bobby have dinner while Norma meets with Walter, a guy who's trying to franchise Norma's Double R restaurants.
And isn't Walter her boo?
I thought so.
Yeah.
Yeah, because Big Ed, once again, just discouraged. You hate to see it. Continuing from before, Audrey tells Charlie she doesn't know who or where she is and cannot leave the house. I will say now, Audrey's entire arc, if you even want to call it that, in this third season, makes no sense to me. It's not expounded on, not clarified.
I think it's clarified. She's in a coma. None of that is happening. Those are dreams she's having in a coma because you see her wake up. I don't remember which episode it is.
It's probably the next one.
You see her wake up in a hospital gown.
You see her in a white room in a mirror.
Yeah.
For like just a couple of seconds.
Yeah.
But I didn't get that from it.
In the behind the scenes, she's in a hospital gown.
I didn't watch it. Sorry. Mm-hmm. So you
had. I've seen very little behind the scenes stuff, but I did see that clip on YouTube. She's probably been in a coma the whole time.
This also culminates in probably the most deliberate throwback in this series, at James performing at the Roadhouse.
One of the worst possible throwbacks they could have done.
He's always been cool.
Yeah. I think I was most shocked to find out that, what's the actor's name, plays James?
Weirdo McBighead? I don't know. What is, I don't know.
I don't mean to insult, well, I'm insulting him. I don't mean to. He is the singer.
No way, dog.
Yes, yes. No, in the credits, I looked for that in the credits. He is the singer of that song.
No possible way.
Check the credits on the music listing at the end of that episode.
That makes me hate it worse.
Okay, I'm going to pause the recording, and I'm going to look this up for you now.
I'll just keep talking, because that's insane. There's no feasible way. I know David Lynch wrote that song.
Now, what episode number was that?
I don't know, dog. I'm just looking up the song.
No, I'm looking it up. I'll find it for you. You go on. I'll find it. That's episode 13. It
was written by Angelo James Marshall. Is that the guy?
James Marshall. Yes, 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 yes.
There is no flipping way that he sung that.
All right. Part 13.
I don't like that at all.
And I'm going to scan to the end if I can get this to play.
Artist James. I mean, everything I'm seeing backs up what you're saying.
Yeah, I wouldn't lie about this because I just hate it
bizarre. As a fact.
All right, Just You, music by Angelo Badalamenti. Is that, if I'm saying that right, performed by James Marshall.
That's terrible.
Yes. Yeah, that it makes it worse.
I don't like that.
You know,
at all.
In season one or whatever, whenever he sang that song with Maddie and
nine.
Oh, it was season. Oh, you know exactly when it was. Okay,
I just saw it. That's okay.
I thought that was a lip sync.
I absolutely thought that. And
I thought they should have picked someone's voice that looks more like it could have come from him, but it was him.
I think we said this exact thing when we went through it. I can tell you, as a musician, he's not even remotely guitar miming.
Okay. I don't know because I don't play. But,
no, yeah. He's way not there.
Yeah. Wow.
How odd. Well, fun that fact.
That was of all the bizarre choices that David Lynch makes, some good, some not as good.
How does he
That's
even
not as good.
Do that, though? Because he talks like right here, and then he's like, Jenny.
It's you.
Weird. Whatever.
Yeah, that was bad. That was pretty bad.
Episode 14.
But he got paid for it, and you and I paid to watch it.
Paid the highest price.
True.
We are We Are Like the Dreamer, episode 14. Things are starting to pick up here, folks. We've only got four effectively Twin Peaks episodes left. We Are Like the Dreamer. Frank informs Gordon that pages found from Laura's diary suggest two Coopers. Albert tells Tammy about the first Blue Rose case, which involved doppelgangers. I appreciated their explanation here about, like, where the name Blue Rose comes from. I really liked that it was just kind of a simple, like, it's because that's not found in nature. It's odd. It would be catching to observe. Like, all those little kind of qualities about it to just kind of deepen the lore of everything. Here we're getting into the kind of too many coincidences for me, where I was kind of like, yeah, okay. But Diane identifies Janie E. as her estranged half-sister. Gordon orders the FBI in Las Vegas to search every Jones's residence. Also, one of my favorite scenes is, like, after they hang up with Gordon, there's two FBI guys in Las Vegas. And one of them goes like, oh, man, how are we going to go through all these Joneses? And the guy behind the desk flips out and points at the guy. And he's like, Wilson, how many times have I told you this is what we do with the FBI? Like, just explodes uncharacteristically and for no reason. And I had to pause. I was laughing so hard. It was really funny. It's very weird, but I loved it. One of the just strange moments of levity throughout the series. But cutting back to Frank, Hawk, Bobby, and Andy are kind of following the instructions left by Briggs to Jack Rabbit's palace in the woods, where they find a naked... I didn't know this lady had a name. Nadio?
Nado?
It's the woman who is no eyes and all breathy talk.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not even talk. She's just like...
Yeah, just some weird grunts, yeah.
A vortex opens, Andy's transported into wherever the fireman guy is.
Isn't that the White Lodge?
The giant. Yeah, I guess so. And he shows him visions of the events in New Mexico and Laura Palmer and two Coopers, kind of a future of Lucy and an electrical pole numbered 6. James learns how fellow Great Northern security guard Freddie Skies bought a strength-enhancing glove and moved to Twin Peaks from London after a vision of the fireman.
They just inject this kid into the story right here, right now.
4 episodes
from the
end.
And do his whole backstory in one little scene.
Where he's just recounting it to James on, like, a loading dock.
And he told the story so well. That's a heck of a long break they had, though, from work at the hotel there.
And essentially, the summation was what the fireman told him about this glove.
You're gonna need this at this time, in this place, so pack your bags and move there.
And we'll circle back to this in just a couple episodes.
I'll be there. Can I read this last part?
Sure.
I just love the way you wrote it in the notes here. When a trucker insults her in a bar, Sarah opens her face, revealing darkness, and bites his throat, killing him. I just like that scene. I like the way you wrote about that scene.
I mean,
you described
again,
it.
Categorically, that is what happens.
It is. And it reveals a whole other set of issues and questions about the character Sarah Palmer that we've known for a long time never knew that.
To put meat on that, if for some reason you've got to be 3 episodes away from the end of Twin Peaks and don't know what we're talking about, Sarah Palmer, Laura's mom, old lady, has been nothing but feeble and vulnerable this entire series.
Yes.
Is being hit on by a
heavy smoker.
Weird trucker, and she's like, I just want to sit here and enjoy my drink. And he's like, mm-hmm. Yeah, I bet, and whatever, and keeps like getting and then I can't remember exactly what she says, but she like reaches up and grabs her face and pulls it off.
Yes.
As if it was like the lid to a cookie jar. Mm-hmm. And then there's just like a dark void on the front of her head. And mm-hmm. I remember teeth. floating around in there. And it kind of looked like a bunch of random flashes of, like, negative photo developments.
Mm-hmm.
But then she... Does she pop her face back on and then bite his jugular off? Jugular. I know it's not jugular, but...
Does she
put I don't
the
know.
Face back on? Now you want me... You've got me wanting
all that
to rewind say, that
she
and
straight
watch.
Up kills this dude. Puts,
yeah, brutally. Yeah.
She kind of snaps back and then starts her classic Sarah Palmer screaming, wailing for
that. Yeah. She's Judy, right?
We'll talk about it.
I mean, is this episode 14?
14. Do you want me to move on? Or...
Oops.
He's legitimately pulling up the Showtime
episode. We're
going to
get a flag. We're going to get a flag.
Yeah, I'm sure the content police is honing in on OCD podcasts.
They are. Guarantee it.
Well, while he's doing that, I'm going to keep going. Episode 15, There's Some Fear in Letting Go.
Oh, wait. I'm about to watch it here. Go ahead.
Cooper's doppelganger arrives at the convenience store that we saw from Got a Light episode. While there, the convenience store ends up being a pathway to Philip Jeffries. The implication to me exists outside of time and space a little bit. But all that to say, Jeffries kind of looks like a giant teapot. And is, like, puffing out answers and smoke. But he's... Mr. C goes to ask Philip about the assassination attempt and where to find Judy, essentially.
May I interject now that I have seen the scene about Sarah Palmer?
Circling back to Sarah Palmer.
She does open her face. there are things happening inside that darkness. You see, like, a grayish hand, and you see some teeth. I think it's Judy. That's what I think.
No full entity, if I recall.
No. You just
like,
see...
Like a random image of a hand.
You just see like a hand and then a face. And then, you know, like... So in other words, something is inhabiting her. And she shows him a glimpse of that, calmly puts her face back on her head, and then leans into him. Mouth open and like
bites
it happens
jugular.
So fast you don't really see it very well, but she's effectively biting his neck, I guess, and a
on
pretty good bite.
That note, Twin Peaks has a very interesting relationship with graphic violence.
Yeah,
because aforementioned, a kid gets hit by a like dump truck going like 70, and it's not gory. It's mm-hmm. not. Anything really. Mm-hmm. It's just like it happens and then the kid's on the ground.
Yeah.
But you know, it's not in the sense of like if you've ever we live in an area where there's a lot of like deer accidents or like who knows, and you know, like you see the impact point and a smear and like
mm-hmm.
that's not really what happens in like the Twin Peaks averse. Even when people get shot, like it's not graphic, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just weird, kind of like you said, like you don't even see her like drawing the blood, I don't think necessarily. It's just all of a sudden his like jugular is just off. Yep. I just always thought that was odd. I don't know. Especially with like them having the freedom to do like a full R rating now. Like
sure.
It's still, it's not like bodily horror, I guess. Like,
make a mess, do it.
Well, I just mean, you know. In, like, Scarface, you know, there's more graphic violence, I guess.
I haven't seen Scarface in so long.
I haven't either.
I don't remember much other than the big mountain of cocaine on his desk.
I have I shouldn't say fond memories of it.
My heart smiles when I think of Scarface.
Antonio Montana.
Yep. And introducing us to his little friend.
You remember that little guy.
Yeah.
We're just jumping back in. Cooper reacts to hearing Gordon's name on TV from an old TV show, which leads him to stick a metal fork into an electrical socket.
Yeah, just
rendering him unconscious.
As brain dead as Dougie was, I don't know why he felt compelled to do that, but, you know, maybe there was... some part of Cooper there, still there, leading him to do that in order to try to get back, you know?
Actually, I think it was during that scene that I remember talking to Shelby, because we watched all this together.
Who is now your fiance.
I know. Thank you. But Kyle MacLachlan, in that moment when he is Dougie until he hears Gordon Cole, but then, like, you kind of start to see the glint of Cooper come back during this, like, crawl to the electrical socket. Because during that scene, I leaned over and I was like, he is a good actor.
He is.
Like, all the kudos to him throughout this series for playing Mr. C, but then Dougie. But you see his posture change and his face kind of change. And, like, when we were watching, we're like, he's about to be Cooper again. Like, there's no way to explain it, really, other than watching it. It was just really neat.
If Kyle MacLachlan didn't win anything for this series,
I don't think he did.
I am personally insulted to a very large degree.
I'm sorry.
It's not your fault.
Well,
it's not your fault, but I mean, he was terrific, wasn't he? He played multiple characters and played them all well.
We will get to a more.
You always say that.
No,
we'll get
I know,
to this.
But
we'll get to that
in the next episode. You get to a more pronounced moment, but
gotcha.
Inspired by Dr. Jacoby's show, Nadine finally has some enlightenment to tell Ed he's free to pursue Norma. She, like, walks a great distance to be like, you're free, Ed, or whatever.
Yeah.
He goes to the double R. Norma's talking to the guy still about a buyout for the double R franchise. But she gets up, comes over to Ed, and he proposes marriage right then and there.
Right there.
Probably the happiest ending of the whole series, I would say. Or at least, like, the most satisfying conclusion for two characters. And some resolve. Log lady calls Hawk and gives him a final message before dying from cancer.
Just in the same inhale, exhale here, you've gone over two more dead actors, Norma and the log lady.
Log lady died.
Died while they were...
Like,
after
before
she
it came
wrapped,
out.
Yeah, after she wrapped her, you know, part of the filming, I think she...
And man, I hate that.
I know.
Because
she was
so good.
She was dead before the series came out, and I think the actor that plays Albert Rosenfeld was also dead before the series came out.
I believe
out.
You mentioned that last time.
Yeah, he was good, too.
He was. No knock, no doorbell. This is a busy episode, everybody.
Is this the last one?
No, we still got this one and then two more.
We're going to 18. Okay, 16. Yeah. Here we go.
Mr. C and Richard Horn follow two of the three coordinates the doppelganger contained. Observed by Jerry Horn, the doppelganger sends Richard ahead to go stand atop this rock where he's electrocuted. Then, as Richard... dissolves, essentially, Mr. C says, goodbye, my son.
His son, we knew it.
I didn't understand it at the time. I thought he was kind of just being funny, but yes, I do think that is kind of a subtle confirmation that Richard was Mr. C's love child. While Cooper lies in a coma, both the FBI and another favorite pair of yours that hasn't been mentioned much, but Chantel and Hutch... are waiting outside Doug Jones' residence. Chantel and Hutch are killed by a neighbor that they provoked during a parking dispute. Another absurdly random scene that transpires is the guy just pulls up and he's like, you're in front of my driveway. And they're like, okay, buddy, what are you going to do about it? And then he just like backs up and then rams into their van.
Yep.
And then they shoot at him and he gets out with an Uzi and shoots at them. All the while, the Mitchum brothers and the FBI are just watching this transpire. And I think the Mitchum brothers even go like, this is what do they say? They say something about like, everyone's real tense right now. Or like, it's a hard time for everybody in the neighborhood. Kind of just a weird little moment.
Did you like the characters of Chantel and Hutch?
I mean, like, Tim Roth's always cool.
Mm-hmm.
He's always going to be Mr. Orange to me.
Mm-hmm.
Just because that was the first thing I remember seeing him.
He'll always be the honey bunny, or you know, from Pulp Fiction.
Yeah,
to me,
fair.
That's the first thing I saw him in.
And not a dissimilar dynamic in this with Chantel or whatever here. Mm-hmm. Like they're just two assassins rolling around. I thought they were fine. I could definitely see a series of just them two.
Her gimmick was she's always eating, like nonstop. She's always eating, snacking on something.
The Brad Pitt to his Danny Ocean.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
They do other stuff throughout the series, but like they just, there's nothing of note to really even say. Like yeah, they kill
just
five
a couple
other people.
Of Mr. C's cronies, you know, carry out some hits for Mr. C.
And then the big moment, y'all. Cooper wakes up from his coma with the memory restored. Mike tells him that the doppelganger's still at large and gives him the owl ring. Cooper gives Mike some of his hair, asking him to make another tulpa. Yeah, he gives him a hair, and he's like, Mike, make another for this. And then he asks the Mitchum brothers to organize a flight to Spokane. I can't remember what the context was. I just remember the moment where someone says, like, we need to call the FBI. And he, like, turns around as he's leaving. He's like, I am the FBI. Mm-hmm. And the theme kicks in and, like, mm-hmm. full volume. And I teared up a little because I was like, friggin' Cooper.
Yep.
We've waited 16 episodes.
Oh, yeah, yeah. We have gone through 2 months of the series.
They really, like,
as it aired.
They earned that moment. All the Doug Jones crap, all the meandering, in that moment, I was just like, thank the Lord, Cooper's yeah. back. And he comes in swinging, dude. Like, he knows what's going on. He knows yep. what needs to happen. And it was just, again, and I can't emphasize it enough, the demeanor change of Kyle MacLachlan once he's Cooper. Like, you see the joy come back, the electricity. He's mm-hmm. standing upright, and he's just telling people, like, you need to do this, you need to do this, I got to get here. It's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Such a good moment.
At some point, he pulls Janie, E, and Sonny Jim aside.
And that, too, like, he just goes straight into being a good dude again.
Yep.
Because he even steps back and realizes, like, oh, I need to, like, make sure they're okay.
Yeah. Yep. Which means, do you think that the whole time he is Dougie, is he seeing this happen?
He's in there.
He's in there seeing this happen with no control of what's happening, or very little control of what's happening. Yeah,
just kind
of has a memory of what happened while he was Dougie. Dougie Jones.
Dougie Jones. But I was so glad to see him back, dude. And what's dumb is, like, I didn't have to wait 20 years for this to happen, you mm-hmm. know? Like,
yep.
I finished season two, and then we started this within, like, the same month.
Yeah.
And it still just felt like, oh, I'm so glad he's back.
Yeah. I mean, none of us fans from the original series back in the day, I guess we had long given up on.
Oh, I can't
that
imagine
there would be
the
any more
catharsis of being like, "There's freaking Dale Cooper."
Yeah, and then when we started hearing in 2014, 2015, rumors that they were going to do another series, and then some of the actors on social media are like, you know, sort of like, can't say. Giggling. And that was building a lot of excitement. That was fun.
I mean, it was so good.
It was good to have it back, even if it wasn't what people expected, you know?
Yeah. I mean, but he hits the ground running. And so then, having received a text from the doppelganger, so Diane is still with Albert, Tammy, and Gordon. And she gets a text, and she tells the task force that years ago, Cooper raped her and took her to an old gas station, exclaiming, but after telling, she says, I'm in the sheriff's station. I'm not me. And then everyone's kind of like, what? And then she pulls out a gun, but gets outdrawn by the rest of the FBI team and shot. And then mm-hmm. she disappears to the Black Lodge. Tammy realizes that the Diane they've been associating with is actually a tulpa. So, where is the real Diane?
Dun, dun, dun.
At the roadhouse, Audrey dances to Audrey's Dance.
Which doesn't really happen, in my opinion. It's part of her coma dream.
It does break the immersion of... Because that song on the soundtrack is called Audrey's Dance.
Yeah.
So it would kind of be like if someone came out before like a Star Wars and was like, ladies and gentlemen, main theme. And then like song kicks off. But and then a fight breaks out and Audrey begs Charlie to take her home. But she suddenly wakes up confused and looking into a mirror.
Yes.
Which you theorize is a coma.
I'm fairly confident about that happening. I mean, even at the roadhouse.
It's weird.
You know, what MC interrupts everything to say, ladies and gentlemen, Audrey's dance.
This old lady you don't know.
He didn't know she was going to be there. He didn't ask her if she would dance if he called her out. And, you know, it's just.
But the thing is, dog, is because it is freaking Twin Peaks, I
right.
can see where
well,
it makes as much sense as anything.
That's fair.
Anyway, though, so here we are. Last two episodes and a lot happens. So strap in. 17. The past dictates.
I don't have any straps.
The past dictates the future. Gordon tells Albert of a secret plan to find Judy, an extreme negative force originally known as Jowday, and is informed that Cooper is heading for Twin Peaks. Coordinates lead Mr. C to Jackrabbit's place, and he is transported to the fireman and then to the sheriff's department, being mistaken for the real Dale Cooper. While talking to Mr. C, Frank receives a call from real Cooper, and he's like, and so everyone's kind of convening on the sheriff's station. The FBI team, Cooper, pretty much all your main players that have been going throughout the series. And then
you notice that, you know, earlier in the season, Lucy is freaked out by cell phones, basically. She's freaked out by the fact that someone can be in multiple places on a phone, and then
that.
They can walk right in the door because they were on that cell phone in your own parking lot. And so when she sees Cooper come into the office and then gets a call from Cooper, it freaks her out. And it's a good thing she had a pistol ready, and she was the hero there. She was the hero.
Yeah, and I mean, probably the most redeeming thing she's done in the series.
Oh, yeah, by far, yeah.
But I think, what is it? Mr. C draws on Frank, but then Lucy's there to kind of put him down.
Yep.
And then Cooper, the FBI, and for some reason, the Mitchums are still tagging along on this venture, arrive.
Well, they take Cooper.
They fly. I know, but there was no reason for them to continue.
Yeah, I just want to see what's going on. And we wanted to see them too. I love those guys. Those characters were great.
At this point, you get another scene of the woodsman being all handsy and then tearing at Cooper's doppelganger body, releasing what kind of looks like Bob's face on a dodgeball. Just an orb that floats up.
Yeah.
And then he starts bouncing around the room. So he's like, isn't he kind of like wailing on Cooper? So here's the weird divisive part that we just said we were going to talk about. This kid, Freddy, with the weird garden glove.
Right.
Who, again, was just introduced like last episode or whatever. Mm-hmm. Comes in and it's his destiny to punch this Bob dodgeball.
Yeah.
And shatter it into oblivion, effectively killing the demon.
Yep.
It's pretty on brand, I guess, that Twin Peaks would introduce someone in, like, the fourth quarter and be like, he's going to be probably the most pivotal.
Well, I mean, they introduced the woodsman so late. I mean, it was in Fire Walk With Me. You see him a little bit. That's really the first time you see the woodsman, isn't it?
Are they even in that?
Yeah, they're not as well made up with the black makeup. But upstairs at the convenience store with the old lady and the little boy, there's a few lumberjacks sitting around. And I think those are the quote-unquote woodsmen. They have dirty faces, but not the black, you know, black coal-painted faces.
But anyway, Freddy breaks the Bob orb. Cooper puts the green owl ring on the doppelganger, sending him to the lodge. And then Nado, or whatever, eyeless lady, transforms into real Diane, who has, like, very red hair. And I didn't know this until doing some research earlier. Black and white fingernails.
Didn't catch that, no.
Pretty subtle. That doesn't really mean anything.
Did you check out that YouTube channel I told you about, Corn Pone Flicks? They've got a whole playlist about the Twin Peaks The Return. It's really captivating. I think you'll like it.
So then, like, there's a weird explanation scene. Me and you both talked about that we thought our TVs messed up because Cooper's face stays on the screen for like a really long time.
It's like, why is that image burned into the TV there? What happened?
But essentially, he gets like teleported to the Great Northern. Him and Gordon and Diane, I think. Cooper unlocks a door at the Great Northern where Mike tells him to... takes him to Jeffries, who then transports Cooper back in time to the night Laura died. Cooper prevents Laura's murder and thus changes the whole timeline. So in the morning, Laura's corpse vanishes where it was never found by the lake. And then it's not like thoroughly explained what's going on, but I was on the edge of my seat for like this whole thing because I was like, what's happening? He effectively is taken back to when Laura jumps off James's motorcycle. Uh-huh. And she kind of runs into the woods, but Cooper is in the woods and he stops her and he's kind of just effectively offers refuge. And he's like, you don't have to go where you're going. And then takes her hand. Honestly, I couldn't really keep up with what was new footage and what was old footage. And the shadows of the woods do a lot to hide, like, the weird makeup that I'm sure they had to do.
Yeah, 25 years worth of age reversing. Mm-hmm.
But, like, you kind of get this sense, like, oh, dip, Cooper's, like, saving her. And you're just like, dang, like, this changes everything. And then, of course, it does go on to show the shot of the bank of the lake the next morning, but there's no plastic. I think it even kind of runs through Pete's little walk a little bit. And then, like, he's just leading her through the woods, and then it cuts back to...
He's taking her to Jack Rabbit's palace, right? That's where he's taking her.
I don't remember where he's taking her, but sure, why not?
Yeah.
And then it cuts back to... And
she disappears.
Well, not just yet.
Okay.
And that's kind of where I don't know how to explain this to everybody, because if we're saying that this is him going back in time, well, it cuts back to whatever timeline we just left where Sarah's alone in her house, older, and she gets mad and starts like wailing on this photo of Laura. She can't impact the photo, though. I don't know if you picked up
the
on
photo
that.
Doesn't rip. It doesn't.
Yeah.
Even though
she's like scratching at it and swinging at it.
Yeah. Happens. Just the glass breaks. Mm-hmm.
So then I thought there were two more episodes when I was watching, but I was like, we're pressing on. We're going right into it. And
but
so
let's not get past, first of all, the background image of Cooper's face that lingers for for several minutes. What was that? What do you think that was?
I don't remember what was going on enough. It's cutting between the Black Lodge and the sheriff station, but isn't someone narrating something while it's all happening?
No, I don't think so.
I don't know. I don't have an explanation. It went on a long time.
I think it is the whole thing is a dream. I think the whole thing is a dream that Cooper is having.
From which point?
Pretty much all of it. It's a dream. And
like every episode up to
maybe,
this point?
Maybe. I don't know. To some extent, I think it's a dream. I think Cooper is, you see him just looking, and because he is dreaming and watching this in his dream, effectively, and... You know, it was said more than once in the series, we live inside a dream, right?
Yep. I will expound more on my thoughts after we get through the last episode.
Go for it.
I have questions for you, certainly.
We're up to an hour.
We'll try to be quick.
Okay, we'll try.
Final episode, What Is Your Name? Cooper's doppelganger burns in the Black Lodge. Mike creates another Dougie who returns to Janie, Ian, Sunny Jim. So that happens here in the final episode. As Cooper continues to lead Laura through the woods, she disappears and a woman's scream is heard. So yeah, the shot kind of closes in on Cooper where you lose sight of Laura. There's a scream. He turns
around. Or maybe it's Sarah's scream.
Not clarified, but I do think it matches many of the Laura screams you hear in typical season one, two in the movie.
That actress can scream.
Sarah Lee, man.
Scream, for sure.
She will continue her bout of fantastic acting in the rest of this episode. Cooper appears in the Black Lodge again, encountering Mike in the arm. He emerges and meets Diane in the woods. There's a lot of Cooper hopping around with little to no explanation in these last two episodes. Yep. He gets back out to Diane, and they're for some reason, Cooper and Diane are paired up. Don't really know why. But he's like, we gotta go. And they drive on Highway 430.
They drive for 430 miles.
Sure. And then cross over an electrical field. And before they do, he stops and he's like, I don't know what it's going to be like over there, basically. But yeah, they cross an electrical field. It's suddenly nighttime. They stop at a motel. Everything looks kind of retro-y.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then they hook up in this hotel room.
They did.
And it's weird. Didn't like it. I mean, I'm not like, you know.
It had to be kind of awkward for.
It was weird.
Before the actors, because they used to date.
I just thought, again, in classic Lynch fashion, it was uncomfortable. Cooper doesn't seem like himself, which I don't know what I would expect him to be like in a getting busy scene, but.
There's been so many versions of him, so, you know, I don't know.
Well, no, like, he kind of seemed Mr. C-ish in that moment. And Diane seems, well, there's two Dianes at this hotel. Yep. For just a second.
And when they see each other, they're like, oh, there I'm standing they over said, there too. Look at that.
Game recognized game.
Like no freaking out by either one of them at all.
No. So, you know, the lovey-dovey scene happens, and then Cooper wakes up alone with a note left for to Richard from Linda, as referenced in the first episode.
Yes.
If you recall, like, one of the very first things that happens is Cooper's talking to the fireman, mm-hmm. and he says, I need you to remember 430 and Richard and Linda. So from the jump, I guess, this is kind of where we're leading to. And then he exits the hotel, and me and Shelby watching were super confused because it's a completely it's a different hotel.
Yeah.
Different car.
Yep.
Seemingly a completely different time, dare I say universe.
Dare you say, yes. As if he has awakened from a dream.
Or has entered a different timeline.
Yeah, maybe.
We'll get there. I can't remember what leads him into town, but he ends up at Judy's Diner.
Yep.
We caught on to that when we were watching.
Sure did.
In Odessa, Texas. Did not realize it was in Texas.
Yes.
But... And then
I think we see a sign while he's driving, maybe.
I remember an Odessa sign, but yeah. I didn't go, oh, Texas.
Yeah.
But then Cooper goes into Judy's Diner. It's a weird vibe. Some cowboys harass him. Again, he's very uncharacteristically not Dale Cooper. Like, right. He draws a gun. He shoots.
Much less polite
less, than Dale Cooper. Less kind and curious and more like... Almost looking for trouble in a weird way.
Yeah, like I can't wait to beat these guys up.
Yeah, you know? He's looking. He seems to know there's another waitress that should be there and isn't. Mm-hmm. So he asks the one waitress there, and she's like Carrie Page, and somehow that leads him to her house, which has the number 6 light pole.
Okay,
as mentioned.
Okay,
and then he knocks on the door, and we see someone who looks like Laura Palmer. Older, but she says, I'm Carrie Page or whatever, like in a country accent. When she first spoke, I was like, freaking Cheryl Lee. I love it. No, just because, like, I don't know, dude. She's just a fantastic actress, in my opinion, even though I've only seen her in Twin Peaks content.
I don't know if I've seen her in anything else.
But this carries on, and this will play into my theorizing and conversation at the end here. So Cooper is like, wait, so you're not Laura Palmer? And she's like, I don't know what you're talking about. But she's like, I do need to get out of here. And he like walks in while she gathers stuff. There's a dude shot on the couch.
Yep, had his head blown off, sitting in a easy chair. Yep.
He looks, and another image of a white horse, little sculptures on the mantle.
Yep.
But, and just again, very not Dale Cooper, not engaging with the crime scene, evidently, not really even being, like, comforting.
Mm-hmm.
He's just like, okay.
Like some stuff's gone down here. Ready to go?
And he's like, well, I'd like to take you with me back to wherever. And then so they come back to the Palmer house. And he's so sure of himself walking up, and they knock, and this random lady answers the door.
Now, you're forgetting. They drive all night.
They drive a long time.
But I looked it up. This drive would take 2 full days. But they do it, and they leave, and I don't know, let's say it's mid-morning.
That's probably why I didn't realize this was Texas either.
They leave in the morning, and they arrive late at night, a trip that would take 2 days by car. They do it in like a quarter of the time. But, you know,
so
that's Twin Peaks for you, right?
They go knock. He's like, you know, who are you? She says her name. He's like, did you buy this house off somebody? And they're like, we don't know, whatever. And he kind of steps away. Fun fact, that is the real-life owner.
That's the owner of the house, the real. Yep. Not an actress, but did fine. She did fine.
I mean, what more could you do?
Yeah.
So they kind of meander back toward the street, and Cooper looks like he's just, like, swirling. And he's like, what? And Carrie Page, quote-unquote, is, like, looking at this house. And then Cooper's kind of hunched over, and he's like, what year is this? And then the lights in the house start to flicker, and you start hearing Sarah Palmer's being like, Laura. And then you start hearing screams, and then the last shot is it looks at this Carrie Page, and in classic Laura Palmer fashion, baby, she poses up and screams.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's just over.
Yeah, that was it. Over forever.
I do think it, for the credits, goes to a shot of Laura Palmer leaning in to Cooper's ear. I do think that is kind of the final shot, so to speak. But yeah.
Just whispering in his ear again, maybe?
I can't even remember if it's old Cooper or like OG.
Let me look.
But
figure this out.
All that's Twin Peaks. The last formal line spoken is, what year is this? So, what do you're sticking with the dream theory?
I mean, it's hard to know, but I think that a great part of it is someone's dream. Yes. Yeah, she's whispering into modern day Dale Cooper's ear. It's in the...
So, look. If anybody does actually find this podcast and this content even vaguely interesting, there are many theories about what all this is. I like kind of the explanation that as much as Cooper wants to be helpful, that some like traumas will always transpire. So my kind of summation is I think he does go back in time. I think he probably does divert Laura off of this path.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't necessarily think it saves her in the way that he means for it. In that sense of like, you know, no good deed goes unpunished kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think, which it's a very high concept way to go about an exploration of trauma, but, like, I think, and I don't know if it's even mean to invoke that, like, if it wasn't Laura, it would be someone else, hence literally, you know,
well,
a new person.
I think it's, just as there are multiple Coopers, there are multiple Lauras, perhaps. Yeah. And Carrie Page may not be Laura Palmer. She might be a tulpa of Laura Palmer, or Laura Palmer may be a tulpa of Carrie Page. You know, I don't know. And, I think that the entity of Cooper, in whatever form it is trying to save Laura Palmer in whatever form she is.
I mean, I don't know how much high concept sci-fi you get into. I mean, there are philosophical theories of, you know, multiple universes that every choice you ever make.
I've seen the Marvel movies, man.
Well, branches off into choices upon choices. And that's why it's just hard to say. I mean, it depends on if you even think the Black and the White Lodge are different, like, dimensions. And, brother, I started watching different people's theories and reading comments on, like, the Twin Peaks subreddit. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's theories about different timelines or alternate universes. There's theories about this is all commentary on David Lynch's ownership over this intellectual IP. About everything from, like, Dale Cooper is us as the viewers. And like there's... I started a 5-hour YouTube essay earlier, and I just was like, what in the world? I don't know. I mean, there is no definitive answer. There never will be a definitive answer.
Okay, I'm going to recommend this to not just you, but...
Is this the corn cob guy again?
Corn Pone Flicks. He has a playlist called Twin Peaks, All Questions Answered.
Well... Let me bring it home just
a
little
bit. And I basically agree with everything the dude says.
So, first of all, are we in agreeance, presumably, that Judy is inhabiting Sarah Palmer?
Yes, I agree with that.
Also, I finished Mark Frost, the Twin Peaks final dossier, literally before I got here today.
Okay. Oh, okay.
Did you know that Sarah Palmer's middle name is Judith?
Oh, man. That changes everything.
Well, and I also think part of how we view this series, dare I say this timeline again, is like, what do you think Philip Jeffries' deal is?
Who do you think that is there?
Well, now, I ask genuinely as far as, do you think he tapped into something... I mean, even Briggs, to some degree, seemed to be existing outside of time and space.
Yes.
And do you feel like Jeffries was tapped into that same thing?
Yes. Yes.
Because, again, as far as we know, Philip Jeffries disappeared in 1989.
We saw so little of him in this universe.
And he didn't know where he was when we saw him. He seemed taken aback that it was... At least 1989.
Right.
Early February.
Right. Or was that, would that have been 88?
No, it was 89.
Okay. Yeah, okay, yeah. I'm trying to remember. I believe you.
So, assumedly, wherever that place is that Briggs and Jeffries went, is neither past or future. Because Jeffrey seemed to be confused about which Cooper he was looking at.
Mm-hmm.
To me, and some of the theories and things I read, seeming to lean into that wherever that place is can evidently see the future, because he seemed to be aware of there being two Coopers, which at that point, chronologically, we did not know yet.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because Cooper hadn't even went to Twin Peaks yet. When in the story timeline when we saw him.
Right.
But I don't know.
Too bad David Bowie was gone at the time they were doing the return, because he did give his blessing, I think, for his voice to be impersonated to David Lynch. But I hate that they turned him into a tea kettle. You know, a massive tea kettle. You know,
I think the dream theory makes it all a little too easy and too convenient, but I don't have a thorough explanation of timelines and dimensions as to say.
Well, if you discount everything, I'll confess this. If you discount it all as dreams, then that throws out all the mystique of the Owl Cave and the, you know, the natives.
I would back up even to season one and his spiritual practice of the Tibetan whatever. Like,
yeah.
I mean, you can see the weaving of philosophy in all of this. And I do think it's interesting. And that's what one of the debates was, and one of the theories was, like, how they never wanted to reveal the killer, and that's why we got this ending. That was someone's theory, is like, this is about reconciling that people will take what you love and mess it up and what it, like, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. That's pretty deep.
I don't know. So, just for some closure, in the final dossier, and then I'll get us out of here because this is running long. And again, I don't know if these books are canon, but we do get some reports on, like, people that I think you would probably like to know, like Leo Johnson.
What's the closure on Leo?
So, Albert did his autopsy. There were bullet wounds and arachnid bites. So, seemingly, he did die. But it did note that the arachnid bites were not poisonous. So, it is presumed that he was shot as well as...
Who shot him, though?
It does not clarify that.
Maybe shot himself.
I don't think that happened.
I don't know.
But Albert wrote that report while sitting at the Double R.
So Leo dead.
Leo's dead.
Okay.
I think Albert said, and the world better for it, essentially. Shelley Johnson knew Bobby from childhood, dated in high school, discovered affair of Bobby and Laura. In her fervor, went to the Roadhouse and met Leo. Within 3 weeks, they were married. Bobby and Shelley married 1 year after Leo's death, and 7 months later, Rebecca was born. So, kind of your typical whirlwind romance story there. Kind of explains why they never exactly worked out. Hank Jennings, Norma's ex-husband, died during a prison shanking in relations to dealings with the Renault family.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Doc Hayward drove Ben Horn to the hospital that night following their altercation at the Hayward home.
Yeah.
Checked him in under injuries of slipping at the Hayward house. Accompanied by Truman to examine Cooper after the disappearance and return in the Ghostwood National Forest. Following all these events, after 26 years of marriage, filed for divorce and then moved to Vermont, which saw him.
Let's see. Slow down here. So he and Mrs. Hayward divorced.
Yes. And then they had the two younger daughters. Eileen's the mom, right? She stayed in Twin Peaks with Harriet and Gersten.
Yeah.
So Donna got some closure in this book. She had moved to New York upon graduating with honors from Twin Peaks High, turned to modeling, if you can imagine, and she stopped speaking to her parents, married a man 2 decades older.
Was it Jack Nicholson?
he was the owner of a dot-com startup during the boom. Encountered Lana Milford, the redhead Southern Belle, in her ventures of modeling and whatnot. Shortly after, potentially due to the reminder of Twin Peaks events, she battled drug addiction in and out of rehab and included a psychiatric break. Ended up divorced and moved out to be with her father in Vermont. As we know, Del Cooper, you know, but kind of what we already knew there, diagnosed with a grade 2 concussion from his smash into the mirror.
Mm-hmm.
Stayed that night and that day and night in the hospital, then checked himself out. And within 2 days, he was off the grid for 25 years. Ben Horn sold Ghostwood, and they used that land to build a prison. He got divorced and mostly lives at the Great Northern. Audrey Horn. So here's some of that classic whatever.
Uh-huh.
Gravely injured in bank explosion, was in the same ER room as Ben Horn that night with a head injury. Ben stayed at Audrey's bedside that day to return as a patient that evening. So, I don't know why. I don't remember why that was. Frank Truman filed a report 25 years backdated, verifying that Cooper had been seen exiting Audrey's room at the hospital 9 months later. Richard Horn was born. Father, quote, unknown,
Uh-huh.
Had Richard at 19, so Audrey was a young mother. She had opened a hair salon and ran.
Okay, so she didn't remain in a coma all those years like she had.
These books are not necessarily considered canon.
Well, I mean, it's written by the co-creator of the series.
I know, that's what makes it hard. But
it makes it canon to me, I would think.
She never let Ben meet Richard. So Ben Horn never, according to this at least, got to meet his grandson. And then she'd closed her salon 4 years before the return and went off the grid. I don't know. Unclear, but toward the end of the book here, I thought this was interesting because I think we even asked this before. Annie Blackburn.
Before we get to Annie,
sure.
Let me just follow up on my comments about Audrey then. So it may be if she's not in the coma that whole time, which that's a devastating long time to survive being in a coma, but I think it happens. She was probably at the point where we see her awaken and look into a mirror, probably in some sort of institution. That's my guess. And having a dream, wakes up, because we live inside a dream.
We live inside a dream.
Annie
Blackburn took to the hospital following events in Ghostwood, remained catatonic for 10 days. All vitals were fine and no explanation as to why she was kind of in this comatose state. Eyes open, obviously. We saw her at the end. Or no? Is it a deleted scene
It's
or
a
not?
Deleted scene in Fire Walk With Me.
But essentially the same demeanor as in the movie when she pops up next to Laura. Just kind of lifeless and like kind of zombie-like, I guess you could say. But
the good Dale is in the lodge.
She never spoke again or acknowledged anyone or responded to anything. So definitely in a catatonic state. Norma signed up to kind of look after her.
What if she is like a Dougie Jones situation then? Like just barely functioning and still in the lodge?
Well, I'll see what you make of this. So Norma took her in and she was living with Norma. And then like one day she had, as we know, during the series, it was said she had attempted suicide. But after all these events, one day she attempted suicide again. Same of slitting of her wrist, but Norma happened to find her one day coming home, but she never acted as if she knew what happened. Only after these events and getting her back to the hospital, she made a declaration of, I'm fine. Norma decided it was too much for her to watch her and transferred her to a psych ward outside of Spokane, Washington, where she lived out the rest of her time.
Very same psych ward maybe that Audrey is in.
But every year on the anniversary of the Ghostwood morning at 8:30, she will say, I'm fine, as if speaking to someone in particular, but obviously no one's there. Tammy Preston noted in the case file that she still looks the same, still has life behind the eyes, but no really future or any notes to speak of about why she's locked into this otherworldly state.
I do not very well understand Twin Peaks. I'm just a dumb country boy after all. But I love it. Love it.
Except
for season two, most of season two, I love it.
I think having listened to the books and processed those, I don't know that I can recommend them. Are we at like an hour and a half?
Hour and a half, yeah.
We'll kind of wrap it up. But yeah, I mean, again, the books are not necessarily considered canonical.
How do you know they're not considered canon?
I had mentioned it before in reference, but like some dates are wrong. Okay. Like they'll talk about, at one point in Annie's description, it said like the weeks that she worked at the Double R. And I'm like, dog, that was days at best.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Between her coming into town, working there, and then the Twin Peaks pageant, it was not weeks.
No, probably not.
Because as we've discussed before, the whole first two seasons took place in like a 30-day period.
Yeah.
So just stuff like that, little discrepancies kind of make it like, eh. You know, if you just want some context or just... As we've discussed, like, we love being in this universe. It's weird and interesting. The first book being so UFO heavy, I feel like kind of maybe not detracts from the series, but it just puts a different spin on it that I don't really think adds anything. Whereas the final dossier is kind of more like wrapping it up. So that one's fine to take in, I guess. But I mean, what do you reckon, man? Here at the end of our Twin Peaks journey.
Well, is it? Is it the end? I mean, you know, I have a vision in my head, as I've said many times, of a reboot of this series. And I would like to see that happen.
I'd want it to be darker.
It could be darker. I wouldn't mind that. You just got to cut out the stupidity from season two. And a bunch of characters that really are useless, you know.
I'm not saying that you can't still have it be kind of funny, but like...
No, it can't be funny. All right, yeah, it can be funny.
It's there's funny. A lot of fluff that could...
Exactly. Too much fluff.
It could be a good two-season miniseries. Maybe not even two seasons. Honestly, I think you could
You could do one season.
18 episodes.
Of...
For the original story.
The original story. And you could do a second season.
Actually, no.
25 years later.
I'm going to say 12 for the original story.
So there were originally 30 episodes in the first two seasons, right? So, yeah, you could do it in probably 12.
12 hours?
I think you could do it in 12.
Yeah, buddy. Especially when half of these characters don't do anything.
Let's make it happen, man. Fan fiction. Let's do it. No, I'm in favor of all new actors.
I mean, you'd kind of have to.
Because you start trying to bring back some of, you just got to bring back all of them that are still alive, and there's not many left, and they're very old now.
Only way that they could be involved, the original cast at all, is if somehow they weaved in circular universe and timelines. And
yeah.
Which could happen.
Yeah, it could. Yeah, there's, you know, it's going to be more profitable that way. But I just really think that this story can be told, be retold.
You could do a very interesting, quote-unquote, reboot that very slyly ties into the theme of, like, time is all wibbly-wobbly.
Yeah.
And... this is all circular and has happened before or will happen again.
What has been rebooted and did well? And I've got the answer, but I want to see if you can come up with anything.
Rebooted and did well.
Rebooted and did well. Like it was good. Very good.
Like a movie?
Nay, I say great. Could be a movie. Could be a TV series.
But you have something in mind.
Oh, yeah.
Do tell.
Well, I mean, have you got anything at all?
I'm struggling to think in this moment.
You know, a lot of these movie reboots, which escape me at the moment, but they just never seem to really have it.
We're in the reboot era, dog.
I know. It's because they can't come up with any original ideas.
Harry Potter's getting rebooted.
Is it really? Is it? No, I didn't know that. Okay. No, the answer is Battlestar Galactica.
Never seen it.
Oh, well, do yourself a favor, man. The original series was great. And when I was a kid, just loved it. And, you know, it was kind of a little bit of a ripoff on Star Wars, and it got lawsuits over that. But in the early 2000s, it was rebooted. And you just said a quote that was in it, and you didn't even know it. All of this has happened before, and all of this will happen again. They used that line. And the reboot of Battlestar Galactica, outstanding. And there was going to be another one about 3 years ago, and then they ended up scrapping it.
Do you mean like did good in a commercial?
Critically
way?
Acclaimed, lasted longer than the original series.
Well, now that's a hard expectation. I thought the Star Trek movie reboots were okay.
Those actually are. That's a good example. But I didn't really see much of the original Star Trek.
I didn't either. And
but
from
I
what
did
I
like
can
the
tell,
Chris
them,
Pine movies. I like
do
those.
Know an avid fan. Yeah. Shout out to my coworker, Mr. Bailey. And he's like, not a huge fan of the
reboots. He didn't like the reboots? Okay.
Yeah, well, but like.
Maybe if I was a diehard fan of the originals, I wouldn't like them either. But I thought they were really
like,
good.
The Star Wars sequel trilogy is just like a rehash of
kind
the,
of.
And
yeah.
like, do you count, like, Superman being done for the third time?
See, yeah, I do. And then, I mean, were they
the
ever...
The new one's fine. I actually like it.
Is it? I haven't seen it.
But, I don't know. Not many things are brave enough to go that route of being like, we're doing this again.
They can redo Twin Peaks. They can do it.
I think if they did, it would be under the guise of what I said about, like, time has, quote unquote, stood still in Twin Peaks in the way that,
mm-hmm.
I don't know.
I would love to be a consultant.
We're the authority on Twin
Peaks. I would
Peaks.
Love to be a consultant.
It'd probably make my brain hurt.
Well, let's get out of here. Yeah, I mean, I could talk about this all night because I'm going to miss it. I really am.
I know. It feels weird. We've done so many of these, but we're not a Twin Peaks podcast.
No. No. It's just that we like it so much. We talked about it for so long.
We have a couple of ideas about our next subjects. But,
yeah.
We'll be excited for the future.
Yes.
Just keep hanging out. Write us. AskOCDpod@gmail.com.
Yeah, somebody email us this time. You know, come on. I know there's a good dozen of you listening out there. Hey, somebody email us, even if you're complaining.
You know what?
Go ahead.
Outside of it being like way too long of a series, send us a movie. The first person to send us a movie, we'll talk about it.
Oh, man. Are you sure you want to go down that road?
I say a movie because it's just a movie.
Okay. Okay.
I can give you an hour and a half or 2 hours.
All right. We will do an episode about
the first person to send us a movie.
All right, I'm excited to hear.
That's what I'm
excited to hear what this will be if anyone emails us.
If anyone does.
So you got to get this edited and get it out. We'll get it out Tuesday.
I'm not going to promise okay. that.
All right, a week from Tuesday.
But
every Tuesday ish. Every once in a while, always on Tuesdays.
I have a job and kind of a life.
Okay, I kind of do as well.
It's hard to. We're self-sufficient,
tough,
man. We're flipping and doing this all ourselves.
Editing sucks, too. It really, really
and just
sucks.
Just to be doing it from the heart and not for compensation.
No. We're losing money right now.
We're in it for the love of the game. But anyway, thank you. It's been what a ride. But
we'll be back, just maybe not with Twin Peaks.
Yeah. Fix your hearts or die, everybody.
Okay.
That's Gordon Cole.
Okay, yeah, you're right. You got to say it like Gordon, though.
Do I really?
Yeah, do
like,
it.
Fix your hearts or die.
That was pretty good. Pretty good. Yeah.
What the hell?
I like it. Yeah. All right, let's go.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.